Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music, Dave.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Who's in the box?
Put the gun down, baby.
No, what's in the box?
Wolves have a territorial range of about 300 miles, and a kill range of 30. If we're close to their den, and if we're within that radius, then they'll come after us. How can we tell if we're close? We can't.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Your son, Mr. Thorne. The son of the devil.
They're insane.
He must die, Mr. Thorne!
You do not want to go that way.
What's that way?
Officer, sir, you do not want to go that way. We're going to the mall.
Hello, Dexter Morgan.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hey, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Good, good. And in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how's it going, sir?
I'm doing okay.
Excellent. For folks who are curious, episode 475 that was released called The Cleansing Hour.
Called the what?
Cleansing.
The cleansing hour. The cleansing. I was trying to make sure I didn't screw up and say cleansing room, and so I forgot to say the. Either way, I screwed it up. Either way, episode 475. Chrissy announced that she will be taking a break until May 1st from the podcast because she has a lot of writing that she has to get done within the next couple of months. So, depending on when people are listening to this, that's the reason. She's not on the podcast, so episode 475, she mentions it. But either way, today is February 18th, 2021. As we're recording this, some of our listeners, like Pam, are curious, since sometimes the episodes aren't released the week after they're recorded, but sometimes a month or two even further. So I think let's get into some housekeeping. DarkDiscussions.com is the news network, which is basically anything genre related. You should check out the website daily because there's columns, articles, news reports, podcasts, all sorts of things, interviews. Right now we're doing a Woman of Horror Month interviews. We've got three up so far. We got another three to five coming called Horror and High Heels, a good alliteration there. And we've done Holly Amber Church, the composer of such films as Open 24 Hours and the tomorrow's release of The Sinner, which is another horror film that's coming out tomorrow. She did the score for that. And so that may be an episode that maybe we want to check out, but we don't know where it's available yet, so we're not sure. Christy Schoonover is one of the ones as well. That's coming out next week. And a few others as well, maybe Lacey Liu. We got possibly some actresses and whatnot, possibly a director too. So we'll figure out, depends on if people can get their interviews in on time. But we have at least 2 to 3 more coming out, possibly up to 8. You can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can let us know what you think of the podcast. So if you have questions or concerns or ideas, or you want to comment on one of our topics, you can email us and let us know your thoughts. We do have one email tonight about the Candyman episode from Holly Masiak. So we'll be reading that shortly. We're on Twitter at DarkDiscussion1. And Eric, we also have some other stuff.
We do. mainly what I am designated to talk about is our Patreon account, Patreon is a service that lets you financially contribute to our online artists like us. Producing this podcast is not free, so we would greatly appreciate any contributions that you care to make to help us offset the cost of producing this show. To find this, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to contribute, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons, and we draw them at random on a quarterly basis. So if you are so inclined, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions, or you can find the link to our Patreon account on any single page of darkdiscussions.com.
Excellent, excellent. And any donations is appreciated. We have numerous things that are on the website that cost money, including Eric pretty much explained it all, so thank you for contributing. All right, so let's get into our email. And this is from Holly Masiak. Holly Masiak is also a co-host of one of the podcasts on the Dark Discussions Network, because we have over 30 or so podcasts. It is the one called Beyond the Screams. And she actually listened to our Candyman episode, and I think that was 474. And this is what she has to say. Hey, all at Dark Discussions, wanted to pop in and tell you how much I enjoyed your Candyman episode. This is one of my favorite movies, and I loved hearing you discuss it. Wizard World just did a free panel with a few from Candyman. It was great to see them all interact. Also learned the significance of number 5. It was because originally they had to say the name 13 times and was just too much. So I guess sometimes 5 is just a number, but it's always fun to speculate. I don't remember if I shared this with many others, but I painted the mural of Helen from the end of the movie back in June. I attached a picture for you guys. Oh, much cool. Love to all of you. Keep up the wonderful work and stay safe. Holly Masiak. So yeah, that mural, I got the picture here as a JPEG, and I'm going to post it up on the Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group. So join the Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group and you can see it. But yeah, that makes sense. 13 would have been a little contrived. And also at the end, when Helen's husband says her name 5 times, that's more believable if he had just mistakenly said it 13 times.
13 yeah. A little much.
It's a little kill.
I still think 3 sounds like the more ideal number. It just seems like an easier thing to get away with. It feels silly if you try to say a thing 5 times in a row.
Yeah, yeah. I think we all mentioned that when he said Helen's name 5 times at the end. We kind of thought that was a little contrived.
Exactly, 5 times, too.
Yeah, yeah. So Wizard World must have had an online panel, because as we know, most things are now doing, our conventions are doing online conventions, I guess. Who knows what will happen with the conventions that have dates now in place, such as Scarecrow here, among others. But if they don't have it live, I'm sure they'll all have it online. I'm not a big fan of online conventions myself. I just don't have the attention span. But a lot of people.
I was thinking about conventions yesterday, because I was listening to a podcast where somebody brought up Terrifier. And it reminded me of ending up in an elevator with Art the Clown at Scarecon. That's something I will treasure for the rest of my life.
That was awesome. That was a great story. Yeah, and that was at Scarecon New England, which was another convention that pretty much folded because of money issues. And of course, COVID didn't help by any means.
I think it was folding before COVID, if I remember correctly.
I was trying to be nice and... And
Mike's not nice.
Yeah, but you're right.
Well, I don't want people to get the impression that was the only thing that happened. You know,
that's true.
Are plenty of things that COVID have ruined for us. That really is not one of them.
That's true. That one was folded literally like 2 months before COVID hit. So if they had waited 2 months, they could have just blamed COVID, but yeah, it was monies and attendance and who knows what else, because they are expensive. They are expensive.
I mean, we attended all of them. I had a lot of fun at all of them. I thought that they did better attendance in their last 2 years than in their first. Were there 4 years of ScareCon?
Yeah, I believe that's correct, Mike. Yep.
Their first 4 years, last 2 years were better attended than their first two. But, yeah, I'm guessing really out of those four, there were maybe only one of them that I think was truly well attended. And right. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah, indeed, indeed. And I think their New York one closed as well, because they had one in New York that went like 7 or 8 years as well. But yeah, either way, that's conventions are just another thing in trouble because of COVID. All right, so that's pretty much all I had for house cleaning and emails. So I guess we can probably get into our topic tonight. So Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we're going to discuss a movie that came out late 2020 called Hunter Hunter.
This is a hard life. You chose it and it suits you. I chose it when I chose you. Renee never had a choice.
What do you do if you see something?
Don't run.
The wolf is back. Ate a raccoon and left the paw.
This isn't a normal wolf.
It's just a hungry wolf looking for a new female. I will catch it.
What is that?
It's a ring.
The wolf ate a ring?
Maybe it was attached to something that tasted good.
What, like a finger?
Where did she say she found this?
Out in the woods.
Hello?
Jeez.
There's a killer out there.
My advice is to move your family out of the woods.
Get behind me!
What if we can't make it out before the freaks?
We don't run from our troubles.
You heard it, right?
We don't get a lot of people out here.
That's what makes it so special.
Nothing pushes us out of our home.
But I'm worried about Dad.
Renee says she heard a gunshot.
You've got a blood trail.
Your husband wanted to catch a wolf. Is that what he told you?
Stay in this room until I come get you. Hey, you understand?
I understand!
Snag a wolf, you gotta out wolf him.
That's right. Hunter Hunter is a technically American horror film, though the two main leads are Canadians, and it was, I believe, filmed in Canada. The director is Sean Linden, and he also wrote the screenplay. The cast is basically a handful of folk. The lead is Camille Sullivan, who's a Canadian, plays Anne Meursault. Devin Sawa, who plays Joseph Meursault, husband and wife. And Renee Meursault is the daughter, and she's played by Summer H. Howell. Also, Nick Stahl is in the film as well, and a couple of other people. It's getting fantastic reviews on Rotten Tomatoes at 94%, which is pretty solid out of 47 reviews. So that's pretty rock solid for independent cinema, never mind any film for that matter. Audience scores aren't as happy. They give it 68%, which is still decent. But again, a lot of people who went into this film probably weren't expecting what they saw. So I bet you there was a lot of dates and thriller people that went into the film, and they go, what the hell am I seeing? So, and then of course the poster doesn't help either, because it makes it look like it's going to be a werewolf film. So
sorry, go ahead.
No, and that was pretty much what I was rounding it up. So yeah, you can say something to her.
It's not time yet, let's keep going.
Sure. All right. So I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So, Eric, why don't you start?
I actually heard about this from Mr. Watson. He was messaging me towards the end of the year, and we were recommending 2020 watches to each other so we could try and round out our lists for the end of the year. And he recommended this one to me, and I checked it out. And like you, I thought it might be a werewolf movie or a movie about wolves, and they set it up like that. But then it goes somewhere else. I really like this movie. The first time I watched it, I think I was so unexpecting of what it actually was that I missed a bunch of stuff. So I got to watch it again before tonight and got a lot of answers to some questions that I have, and I'm much happier about the movie at this point because they give you just about everything. I just didn't catch it the first time. So yeah, I really enjoyed this movie, and it had one of my favorite endings of any movie in recent history. so yeah, I like this movie.
All right, very good. For me, I actually heard about this film through Eric Webster. Eric Webster had brought it up during our 2020 recap episode, and he actually had it on his top 20 best horror films of the year. I believe you had it at number 17, Eric. He also mentioned during that episode that it had one of the best kills of the year, even though they didn't know they were dead yet. So it was very ambiguous. So we were very curious. So when we were thinking of doing a film last week, I threw out a couple of films, and Mike jumped on this one, said, yeah, let's do that one, because Eric said it was pretty good. So I watched it last night. This is a pretty damn good film. I would have probably had this on my top 20 as well. If I had seen it in 2020 before making up my list, the acting is really solid. The story is really good. Like Eric mentioned, there's a few red herrings where you think it's one type of film, then it goes somewhere else altogether. I do like people with behavioral health issues, specifically when it's antisocial personality disorder issues, and this is one of those films. So we possibly have non-supernatural elements. So I was very happy with the film, and it was a big thumbs up. Let's go with you, Abe.
So I heard this film. I think I came knew about it prior to us deciding on it to be a topic, watched it today after I got back from work. And overall, it was a pretty decent movie. I thought it was well shot. The camera work was really solid. The cast was strong throughout. And it really moves at a quick pace. Actually, towards the third act, it really moves fast. It was done well in a way that it didn't feel rushed. And it possesses one of the probably most shocking endings I've seen, in terms of just how visceral it is. I definitely agree with the red herrings. It kind of tries to play with your expectations with certain genres and shifts them to give you a surprise. But it's done in a pretty effective way that it doesn't feel cheap. And it was a pretty good surprise. I'm not sure if it would rank very high in my list if I had seen it during 2020, but overall, I'm glad I watched it.
All right, very good. Mike?
Yeah, I don't know if it was through Eric that I first heard of it, or if I'd seen it somewhere else. I do know he had mentioned it, but the way he had described it, despite the ending, when I was doing my end of the year run throughs and was running out of time, I kind of bumped it off the list because he said it like, I think you had said something like akin to the fact that it was very slow, like starting off, but it had a hell of a finish or something like that.
I think what I said was at the beginning, you're not going to think it's a horror movie, but it's a horror movie.
Okay, maybe, I don't know. So whatever it was just this one of the things that made me think, okay, this might not be a thing I'm in the mood for at the moment. But I was really intrigued to watch the ending. And then Eric has given some other cryptic statements. I will recommend not reading the blurb about the film. At least the blurb that I read, like, you know, because it does kind of sort of spoil the twist ish. As to what's going on or what where the story goes.
IMDb does not, so I don't know where you saw yours.
Amazon had pretty much spoiled.
Oh, really? Bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah, read the IMDb
so,
blurb.
Yeah, I don't remember which blurb I saw.
I'm just letting our listeners know they can read the IMDb one without spoilers.
Okay. So anyhow, I liked it. It was definitely a shocking finish. Yet another new entry on our very long list of Chekhov's items, I think. we could put in there. items or perhaps actions, I think, might be the better way to phrase it. I was a little disappointed we didn't get more wolf action, I guess. But I was very happy with what we did get. I would also say that I like the fact that this was a film that focused on how should we describe the family?
Rural country folk.
Rural country folk.
Also, preppers.
I don't know if they're really
survivalists.
They're fur trappers. That's what they do for a living.
Right. That is for fur trappers, and for a variety of reasons, a lot. If this was a Hollywood film, I suspect they would have been a little bit more judgmental in dealing with the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the fact that they allowed them to be fur trappers without being all high and mighty about it. About the how horrible it is that you're living by trapping. They just kind of let their lives play out. Don't say that how wonderful it is. I don't think they glamorize it by any means. If you're an anti fur person, I think you'll have this will not change your mind. And if you're pro, it's not going to change your mind because that's not the point of the film.
Man, I didn't even see any of that, but I see your point now, Mike. That's fair. Anything else, Mike?
No, that's it.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Yeah. So, speaking of a film that Mike passed on, because this one actually came out December 18th. So I can see why a lot of people missed it. But another one that has a hell of an ending that Mike missed and should check out too is A Good Woman.
It's hard to find when you
Jesus Christ.
So
why are you doing episodes of The Office while you're playing Far Cry 5?
Honestly, every time you mention it, you're just making sure he's not going to watch it.
Oh, I care less if he does, to be honest. But I just do it to bust him. All right, so I guess we can do the wiki, Eric.
Wiki. Joseph and his family live in a remote wilderness as fur trappers, but their tranquility is threatened when they think they are being hunted by the return of a rogue wolf, and Joseph leaves them behind to track it.
Yeah. So I went in completely blind. I didn't even read a blurb. I didn't see a trailer. I didn't even see the poster until after the film. So I had no idea what the film was about. But as it was beginning, I was thinking, okay, it's going to be some sort of dangerous war wolf from like Game of Thrones or something, not some, you know, some monster movie. But we'll talk about all that after. So that's a fear.
I would have gone for like another wolf punching movie. That's where I would have expected it to be going.
I
hadn't discounted that the first time I saw those.
Yeah. So let's discuss some stuff before we get into the spoiler section. So Mike brought up the fur thing. I didn't even think of it to be honest, but because it wasn't like they're hidden baby seals over the head or anything. I mean, these are like beavers and groundhogs and stuff like that. So deer skins, things of that nature. So it's a little different, I think, especially since they're using every animal that they kill for food. So it's not like they
use every part of the animal.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. So they take the intestines and they save the stomachs and all that to use as
bait.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for. And then they sell the fur and then they eat the meat. So I don't see any issues at all with it.
I agree with you, Phil. But some people are of the opinion that killing an animal is always wrong. So.
And right. There's people who just don't like trapping in general and consider it cruel. This is the reason I didn't want to get into this thing, because this is not what the film is about, and it is not trying to make that statement.
Nope.
No.
Right.
One way or another. Well,
either way, those people can go burn in hell and fuck off. But
wow.
You absolutely do. There's nothing wrong with living off the land, especially if you're doing it properly. So fuck those people. And they're the ones that are wearing leather shoes and belts. Okay, so anyway.
How do you really feel about that, Phil?
You liberal, pinko, commie, Californian, New Yorkers, fuck off. Okay, so let's talk about this film. Back to defending that. Yeah, so they are not the typical fur hunters. They're living off the land, survivalists, as Abe mentioned. It's a strange life, especially since they have a young daughter, so I don't know how appropriate it is, because they're living in a shack that they built or just inherited, you know, moved into, that happens to be on federal property. So,
well, and Phil, that's one of the things that was clear for me on a second viewing, which is that apparently this the father comes from like a family of fur trappers, and that cabin's been in his family for however long, but because some law changed around the way, it's now federal property, even though it wasn't when that place was built, and his family has always lived there. So one of the reasons, like one of the big questions I had going into this a second time was why didn't he bring anybody in to help him? And now the answer is clear, because he would have gotten kicked off his own land.
Yeah, that's actually correct. I did catch that. I didn't understand why they were living there, but I did catch that if they brought someone in, they would have the federal government investigate and find out that, hey, you're squatting on our land.
Right.
And so,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it still irked me that he put that over his family safety, considering he knew that there was the nature that there's something far worse than a wolf out there.
Well, he doesn't know this until later in the film.
Well, yeah,
not that late.
Abe has a point, but we'll get into that later.
No. But they've been living out there for years. He has, since he was a kid. And then his wife, whenever they married, and then his daughter, whenever she was born. So there was no issues until this film. So, you know, obviously there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens before this film that has nothing to do with what happens in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was confused, Abe, when you brought that up. You're right.
He's talking about something that happened in the film. We'll get into it after spoiler flag.
Gotcha. Okay, fair enough. Any other items that we want to discuss before we bring up the spoiler? Anyone?
I just want to say that I made a point of tracking down the song that is playing during the climactic scene of the movie, because I thought it was pretty awesome.
It was a pretty damn good song. And what was it?
It was.
Hang on, let me pull up here. It is called Hypnotized Narcissist by a band called Tales of Murder and Dust.
And what was the band's name again?
Tales of Murder and Dust.
Cool name.
Okay. The reason
that's
going to be the song we're going to use on the way out.
That does actually pop up in the subtitles, because watching it with my wife, who is hearing impaired, we usually have the subtitles on, and so it does come up that that's the music she is listening to.
Oh, cool.
All right, very good.
I didn't even think of looking at that, because I didn't know that's something that goes into closed caption.
Yeah, it sometimes
it usually
does.
Is. Not
I just
always.
Asked Shazam. I was like, what's this song? And it told me.
That works, too.
There you go. I used a different one though. I used let me see which one I use.
Well, Apple actually bought Shazam, so it's built into Siri now, so you can just ask Siri, what's this song? And
Really? Oh, okay, because I've been using this SoundHound is what I'm using, but okay. If I could just ask Siri, that's interesting. Okay, cool. Thank you for that update. All right, so I guess we'll throw up the spoiler and we'll talk about anything and everything, but before we do, I'll just give a quick synopsis. Besides, well, actually, no, that synopsis was pretty good. So I don't.
I was going to say I already did the wiki.
Yeah. So all right, so we're throwing up the spoiler.
All right. We are now in spoiler territory.
That's right. Okay.
Bring
so
traps in your rifle.
What do we want to do? What do we want to discuss?
The movie.
What did you guys think of, I guess now, after learning that it's been in his family for years, and this is a normal life for him and not something that he goes, I'm getting off the grid, I guess it's not as confusing as I thought.
Well, and that's what I was talking about. Like, I had a bunch of questions coming into this for a second time, and the answer to most of them is I have become a bad movie watcher and don't have my eyes on the screen the entire time. Because if I had, I wouldn't have had half the questions that I did. Because there was something in the movie that confused me quite a bit, which is he finds the – well, basically, he's out hunting for the wolf, right?
Yep.
And stumbles by accident across this, well, collection of corpses, human corpses. Because he notices the wolf has a human hand in his mouth. And there was something about the way that was set up that just went right over my head. I didn't quite understand what was going on the first time I watched it, because the lawn chair is what fucked me up. Because there's a lawn chair there, so I thought, like, is this a family that was out there and somebody killed them?
It looks like basically this is where he the main antagonist drags the bodies.
Yes.
And I think he sits there and just kind of enjoys the atmosphere of it.
Right. And I got that the second watch, but the first watch, because it was such a surprise, I was like, wait, what? What?
Yeah. So the blurb I read had said something about the father going out to hunt the wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And then about, a stranger coming to the cabin with the wife and the daughter.
Oh, boo.
So yeah, that's – so I already knew there was a human antagonist to this.
That's a bummer that got spoiled for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's not that big of a bummer. So I don't want to know if you're a bad movie watcher for not picking it up. I picked it up, but I can say that I probably picked it up because it was told to me that that was a thing. Right?
Okay, gotcha.
So I'm not going to chastise you necessarily for that reason.
The reason I say I'm a bad movie watcher is because this time there's also there's an additional shot when the husband is out there setting up the traps, because I hadn't realized it was him that set up the traps the first time. And
that's right.
There's also
that's
some right. shots while he's on the radio with his wife. And clearly the first time I watched this, I was just listening and not really watching, because while they're having that conversation on the radio, you get some close-up shots of some really decomposed human bodies, like some are just skulls at this point, and that becomes very clear that this is just a dumping ground.
Right, right. Yeah,
there's something that I guess some serial killers, some murderers will actually return to places where they'll keep the bodies. Mm-hmm. So relive the thrill and stuff like that, and the way he during the climax, I remember he was kind of beating his chest and kind of getting to the thrill of it. So this is about reliving that adrenaline and stuff. And considering his music choices are like heavy metal and stuff like that, this is about a thrill killer.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the area where all the corpses are, including the ones that are decomposed, they're set up like kind of ritualistically too, kind of seems certain ways.
Well, I think the deal is, and this is all left very vague, and I think purposely so, but it looks like the deal is he'll kidnap a woman, bring her out there, tie her to a tree, and watch her die and then go get another one.
Right, right. That's what I'm thinking too. And who knows what else he does to them, because it appears he's a rapist as well, based off of how he's about to act with one of our protagonists.
And the only reason this all goes down is because he came out there with a woman and watched her die, and when he went to leave, his car wouldn't start.
That's exactly right. Yep, exactly. Yeah, so when he finds the hand in the wolf or whatever, I thought that maybe it was a monster movie because they keep on talking about this dangerous wolf is out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now back because we're trapping animals, and it knows that all the trapped animals are
easy food,
easy feeding. Yeah, yep. Exactly. So we have to start worrying about the wolf again. And the way they were talking about it, and then you finally see the human hand, you're figuring, okay, this is going to be some either mutant wolf or some monster.
That's totally intentionally done by the filmmaker. He's totally leading you down the wrong path to the first 20-25 minutes of the movie.
Exactly. Yep. I'll say this, Eric.
I thought he did a good job too, because when it becomes apparent that the wolf isn't really what they need to worry about, I was like, uh-oh, okay.
Eric, this is one of those films like Eyes of My Mother or It Comes at Night, where people ask for help or do help or whatever, and then the people that give the help or get the help, bad things happen to them, and you say, that's, you know, they fucked up. It's, who cares? It's, you know, this is kind of like that film, those films too, where don't help people.
Well, don't let them in. Yeah, at the same time, this one's a little bit different, because I think picking up a hitchhiker is significantly different than finding somebody injured in the woods.
Well, what about It Comes at Night? You say they let three people in who would have been die of a virus, and they let them in, and you said they shouldn't have let them in the first place.
Well, actually, yeah, but in that film, it was basically because one character went into a room they was supposed to, and it was a kid, little kid.
Right, but if they didn't let him in, Eric said during that episode, it would have never happened. They would still be fine.
We're not talking about that movie tonight.
That's true. But I did the same thing with Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane, when I said John Goodman should have never let him in. But either way, so what you people should learn is don't help others. Let them all die. I'm just kidding.
Well, and what also became clear to me on rewatch was that when they found him and brought him in, found the guy in the woods and brought him in and helped him out, and they thought he'd been attacked by the wolf, what really didn't come together for me the first time I watched this was that that's not what happened. He had been in one of the husband's traps. And the only reason that came together for me this time is that the first time I watched the movie, I missed it because eventually she finds her husband dead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he got the wound from her husband. I didn't know it was from a trap that the husband set up.
Well, and here's why I know is because her husband was shot, and I was so concentrated on the fact that she had just discovered her husband dead that I missed the fact that next to his dead body is a sled that has a blood stain on it right where that dude's leg wound was.
Oh, so he was carrying him back to the cabin.
Right. He trapped the guy, and he thought he was injured enough to be helpless and was going to bring him back to the cabin, but the guy got his gun away from him and shot him.
Right. Interesting.
So none of that came together to me on my first watch, but I got it this time around.
Gotcha. Yeah. So those traps unfortunately kill the cop too.
I don't think they kill him. They hurt. They fuck him up pretty good. I don't think he's dead.
Yeah. He did die because the woman cop said he's dead.
Oh yeah, she did.
When they came, basically she went. And he said, tell my wife. He goes, no, you're – and she says, no, you're telling your wife yourself. Mm-hmm. And then she goes back, gets the other cops, calls in the other cops, and by the time they get back, he's dead.
Yeah, they're trying to resuscitate him, but he's not responding. I remember that, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I missed that. I don't remember saying he's dead, though.
No, oh, but it's pretty clear he bled to death.
Yeah, and then they said she said something about we got to get revenge. Not in those terms.
Who did this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think she'd want that regardless, but...
Right.
Basically, it's bad decisions and mistakes and mishaps that lead to this horrible outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I will say the first bear trap was that painful, but man, that second one, that totally took me by surprise.
That was pretty freaking awesome.
Oh god,
yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, so it's a curious thing too, because you figured Sawa was going to be the lead, and he really isn't. It's Sullivan that's the lead. Camille Sullivan turns out to be the lead, because it's weird, because in the credits, Camille Sullivan at the end is listed as the lead, but in all the promotional material and stuff, they say Devin Sawa, because obviously he's the most well known, mm-hmm. and that's just a trick, because she really is the protagonist of the film.
Well, it's kind of funny. The character reminds me a lot of the sheriff guy from Misery, who's trying to find out what's going on, and then he gets unceremoniously suddenly killed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's kind of like that too. Yeah, because that's what it is. Basically, Devin Sawa's character, Joseph. Decides to go hunting for the wolf, and then he stumbles onto all the corpses of the woman, and he now knows that there's something worse out here than the wolf.
Mm-hmm. Here's a piece of trivia that I find absolutely hilarious. Does anybody know what movie Nick Stahl, who plays the killer in this movie, does anybody know what movie he was in 1993?
He was in Bully, and he was in Sin City, and he was, I don't know what else he was in.
The Man Without a Face.
Man. Oh my god, that's funny, now I get
Isn't
it.
Isn't that awesome?
That is awesome.
I've heard of getting a facelift, but that one was ridiculous.
That's terrible. The reason I kept on thinking, I go, why isn't he just going to the cops when he finds the corpses?
Mm-hmm.
But again, that has to do with no matter what, if the federal agents come on, He loses his house, and so
yeah. But at the same time, it bothered me, because he's just like there's clearly a predator that's preying on women. He's got a wife and kids, and I was like, why don't you think about them instead of this fucking house?
Well, it's also made very clear that he is the macho of macho-est men, and like they have that whole conversation with his wife where he's like, life is tough, deal with it. We got to take care of ourselves and blah, blah, blah. He seems like the type that really would just never ask for help from anybody, no matter what circumstances.
Plus he seems like the type that, has become disenfranchised with, government and law enforcement.
Well, that too.
I don't know if he's disenfranchised.
I understand where it's coming from, and it probably would have been a wiser choice to call in the authorities no matter what. But I think they set up the character well enough that it kind of made sense for him.
Yeah, I don't think he's a guy who's like, again, he's not a guy who went to go living off the grid because he was spoiled from living city life or something. So I don't think he's disenfranchised. He probably is, just because of his lifestyle, he's probably suspicious of authorities, period.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, because he's living off the grid illegally, that's really what the big deal is.
There is actually a scene that actually can have, so that shows how unsocialized or just how lacking he is. There's when he finds what he thinks is a campground, and he's trying to practice saying hello. He's trying to find out what to say. when he's, and then he's kind of like, hey, but he's kind of like, almost like someone who's just so unused to doing that.
I kind of understand what you're saying. At the same time, I think he was just trying to get somebody to move.
Yeah. But
it was just like the way it was, like, because he never seems to interact with anybody but her, you know, his family.
Mm-hmm.
My bigger question is, how exactly did they end up as a couple?
Yeah, that's a good question too, Mike.
Yeah, I wonder.
I asked Mr. Watson that question. And he was like, I don't know. They've been in town? I don't know.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking she's probably a local anyway.
And he says, let me take you back to my cabin in the woods. And where, you know, we don't have running water. And I have to catch and kill my own food.
Here, wear this deer skin. It's sexy.
And yeah, here's some. Well, this is all I offer you.
I would agree.
And our potential progeny.
I would agree with Mike, especially if they decided together to move off the grid. But you're right, just her living, him already living off the grid, and then her just deciding to do so is questionable. I mean, the best is what Dustin Watson said, which is probably just met her in town. She's a local. I don't know.
Well, and I also brought up the question, and really the answer is Chekhov. But the question I have is she the daughter is 13 years old, so they've been together for at least 13 years. How has she lived out here with him for 13 years without learning how to skin a deer?
You are my wife. Goodbye, city life. Green Acres, we are there.
What the fuck is going on?
I'm just thinking about the wife and the husband just living out into the open, leaving the city life.
I think this is very much if this happens so that the story can happen. I think the skinning thing is done.
So it can come back later.
I don't think that it was necessary, because actually I find it less credible. Because what you're doing is telling me that there's a woman who has never skinned an animal before in her life. You know, her daughter has to walk her through it, and she apparently gets it right the first time and gets it so right.
Right.
That she now can skin a whole human being.
I know.
Right.
Spoiler warning.
She's a natural.
Well, I doubt she really cares. I doubt she really cares about if she gets it correct with the human being, but
yeah, but he's also keeps him alive while she's doing it,
which is impressive, because he should have died from shock.
That was so awesome.
Right, we'll get into all that when we.
Part of me wants to ask it like there's like is that could a like is there any feasible way that a person could survive that, and how would the medical treatment deal with that afterwards?
First of all, you're dead, probably. But second, I saw it in Martyrs, so I guess.
I was about to say, you bought it in Martyrs. Why can't you buy it here?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, she wasn't supposed to live that long. So my question, right? So, and she I would imagine eventually died in Martyrs.
I'm assuming she wasn't expecting him to live long either.
Right.
She wasn't expecting, but then you got people arrive there that potentially could get him to a hospital. In a reasonable amount of time.
No, he's not going to make it.
Regardless, it still makes me want to ask the question if it's a thing that could happen, if not necessarily in this particular case.
Well, whether or not they bring him to the hospital, I don't think it really matters. He's kaput.
Again, regardless of him in particular, Phil.
I think maybe if you did it at the hospital... with doctors standing there ready to jump in, maybe, but out in the middle of nowhere where they gotta like hike to get to the road to begin with, no, right. That dude's toast.
Right. I mean, if he hasn't severed any major organs, I don't know how much blood loss there's going to be. I imagine that would be the thing that really probably does it, or maybe he does die overall from shock.
Mm-hmm.
But
eventually infections.
Well, eventually, would they do skin grafts over his entire body to try to save him?
I don't think they'd live.
Yeah, and I don't.
Well,
I don't
think as I said, he probably just died from shock. I mean, that amount of pain in that short amount of time is extreme beyond measure.
Now, Mike did had a fair point though about her meaning the mother not knowing how to skin.
That was one of my questions, and I think they just want to set it up for you so that later when she pulls out the knives, you know where she's going with it.
Yeah,
right. And they've established that she knows how to do it. Again, I don't know why they need to establish that the daughter had to teach her how to do it.
Because the daughter knew how to do it.
Just because the husband wasn't around.
Right.
No, but they could have still had her knowing how to skin a rabbit without the daughter having to
I agree. And then that was one of my questions is how could she live out there with him for 13 years and not know how to do that?
You do have a fair point, which is, yeah, they could have just had Anne know how to skin, because whether she knew how to skin or had to learn doesn't affect the end, actually, really that much.
Well, and so I think Mike's right that it makes more sense for her to already know how to do that, but they went the other way for whatever.
Yeah, I didn't realize at first when I was watching it, I thought she had just went to join them in the woods. You know, that's why she was so, you know, she needed to learn that. But I guess they just wanted to, of course, set it up for the big bloody ending, you know?
Right. This is what it says in Wikipedia in their first paragraph for the plot. It goes, Joseph Meursault, his wife Anne, and his daughter Renee live in the remote Canadian wilderness, making a meager profit as fur trappers. Joseph trains the eager Renee how to bait and trap various animals, while Anne stays home and takes care of the cabin, washing clothes and fetching water. So maybe they had to designated roles, the two adults, and then the daughter was
now that the daughter's old enough to do that, but
the daughter was taking the role of the next hunter, I guess,
yeah. Or something. Well, there's certain bits in the character of the wife that kind of show she does not really enjoy hunting at all.
She really does not enjoy killing that rabbit.
No, yeah. So this is probably one of the reasons why she was so late trying to learn skinning.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't a rabbit. It was a fawn, wasn't it?
No, she actually shot the fawn, but she snapped the neck of the rabbit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So that makes sense then. The reason she didn't know was because she didn't do the cleaning. She only did cleaning, meaning taking the fur off and all that. So and it didn't appeal to her. And I guess
she's squeamish.
Yeah. That makes me feel a little better looking at it that way. So I do like that they're French Canadians. That's cool. But anyway, good Renee. That's good. And last name or so, you know. But either way, or Meursault, if you prefer to Anglicize.
You can move on.
Yes.
Now let's see here. I had a question for you, Mike, because I meant to ask you when you were talking about what you felt about the film. Would you have had this film in your top 20?
Top 20, probably. I don't know where. I don't know if it would have hit the top 10. It certainly would have been a contender for most uncomfortable moment. Although as a couple of those, and certainly, you know, a runner in the running for best ending. But it would have been somewhere in my 10 to 20 range, probably in my 10 to 15.
Okay. I was just curious. Yeah, fair enough. The movie, even when he stumbled on the corpses, I still thought it could be a monster movie, like maybe like a Bigfoot type thing or some half
some half intellectual, mm-hmm. Intellectual creature that had some intelligence, like a demon or something. I didn't know what I was going to expect. So it didn't occur to me that it was going to be actually a serial killer until literally the third act.
Right. When they find the dude, you're like,
Yeah, I didn't trust him. That's right. For sure. But I still thought, well, maybe he was a victim of some beast. But when he comes to and he's not sick really anymore and he doesn't mention that it was a monster or a beast that attacked him or a wolf, then that's when I said, okay, this is a serial killer and he's the serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he had woken up and he goes, oh my God, yeah, there's some monster creature out there, attacked me, it's a wolf or I don't know what it was, then I would have said, okay, now it isn't a serial killer after all, and we're going back to the monster. But
in a way, suggests that he got attacked by the wolf and he was like, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's go with that.
But I didn't quite, I knew there was something off about the guy, but I didn't, since I was unclear on the whole corpse setup to begin with, the first time I saw it, it didn't really click as a serial killer until she went out there and find her husband's body.
You're right.
Then I was like, yeah. Oh, she better get back there.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah. Damn daughter was useless because all she'd had to do was club the guy in the head and everybody would have survived except her husband. But
I'm not going to get too mad at a 13-year-old girl for not clubbing somebody over the head.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she was.
Yeah. Panicked. So I at first I was kind of confused how the serial killer got to drop on a Syrian's hunter, the father. But I kind of, after hearing about thinking of the bear trap, I think what happened was he was the father was waiting for the quote unquote wolf, but the guy stumbled into the trap. He went to go help, and the guy grabbed his gun and shot him.
Oh, I don't know, Abe. That might be what happened, but there's also it's still unclear to me. I think there's the possibility that the father was actually hunting the serial killer.
Oh, well, he was definitely hunting the serial killer.
Serial killer. But
the question is what Abe, I think you're saying, is when the husband found this guy, did he think he was an innocent bystander rather than the serial killer that he was hunting? And so that's why he was carrying him on the sled, not expecting
the
bad guy. In other words, he wasn't expecting the guy to pull out a gun and shoot him in the head because maybe he didn't think this guy was the serial killer. You see what I'm saying?
I don't know. I will never know because they don't show us explicitly, but I suspect that it might be that he thought he'd incapacitated him with the trap.
Right. And that's as possible, logical as Abe's suggestion, because again, we just don't know, which kind of makes it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I mean, it was kind of shocking that we didn't see his perspective. And it made it more of a mysterious and psychological thriller when she goes out there and he's just dead. It's like, holy shit, they just killed off one of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was kind of surprising. And then to have him.
Well, and you also still think it might be the wolf, because in amongst all this serial killer stuff, there is a damn wolf out there.
That's right. Yeah.
Which pretty much vanishes at a certain point in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it killed the dog, and then I think it got scared away or something, didn't it? Something happened where I thought it ran away.
It confronts the daughter and the mother, and then she screams at it and walks away, and that's actually the very last scene of it, of the wolf being seen again.
That's right. Yeah. But again, this movie, especially by that point, is only like 48 hours. Right?
This is a fast-paced movie.
It's very quick.
Because and it's not like, 3 weeks later or 2 weeks. Literally, this is the next day or 48 hours. The whole movie takes
when she goes to the cops, she says
72 hours.
When she goes to the cops or whatever they were, they say that they've been out for something like 36 hours. So 36 hours isn't long to be out on a hunt. And that was the second day he's been hunting. So,
right.
So so we're talking, yeah, maybe 72 hours, I think, for the whole thing.
Right. Maybe. That's what I'm thinking too, Mike.
Well, and yeah. One of the things I really enjoyed about this movie is they did a really good job of setting up all the characters that you need to know very well mm-hmm. without having to drag on. I mean, the whole family gets set up so that you know what everybody's role is. And then those two feds, right? Danny and the gal that's always bugging them about the satellite phone.
Right.
You understand those characters well enough very quickly. And I thought it was really interesting that the expedience with which they did some really solid character development.
Well, little things like him, like her making fun of how bad the food smells.
Right.
You know, that... Yeah, you know, they repeat it. You know, that's part of it. You know, that gives you a sense of who they are, what their daily routine is, and what the relationship is.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's just kind of, you know, it uses it time effectively. You know, you get the idea of what each character is about. And I think it also helps, too, the cast is very small. It's not a big-ass cast, so you have enough time to develop each character effectively at the time you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I think Abe, that comment, specifically the one about it uses its time effectively, is really good. Yeah, because even when they have the throw-in stuff just to break up scenes, like where, you know, the stupid yuppies, and not just yuppies, but Canadian yuppies. That's the worst.
Stupid.
So, but those, I mean, just throwing him in, you think they're a waste of time, you know, they're just there, but which they are. I mean, they're just there for atmosphere and whatever, but it's used appropriately to break up more suspenseful scenes. And so I think
it also gives an excuse for that guy to find the car on the side of the road.
Right.
That's exactly. Where he sees it.
Because he sees it one time and he just thinks maybe someone's out there taking a piss in the road or something like that. And he doesn't think about much about that. Then he comes back after he deals with the yuppies again, and then he sees it
there.
Which
is the next day, and the car's still there. Yeah.
So they at least find a way to make it work. It doesn't feel like a complete scene that could be cut out or used. It has a reason for being there, because it's the same people twice in 2 days, so it means the same pathway where the car is.
Right. And also, it makes sense that, you know, he's curious at the car at first, but like you said, you know, it could be a guy just taking a hike or a guy taking a piss or whatever. But then when it's there 24 hours later, he's now curious and then he pulls over and then he gets out because he wants to see, okay, is someone out there camping or are they actually lost or hurt, you know? And so, it makes more sense too. So you're right. It was actually a good screenwriting bit there to have him notice the car the first time, but then actually stop the second time, which unfortunately he should have never stopped.
The last 20 minutes of this movie are really something else.
There's so much going on.
Cause like all around the same time, you're discovering that, The husband is dead. That dude in the cabin is trouble, and he's currently alone in there with the daughter. And Danny fell into two traps simultaneously.
Yeah. Shit luck.
Oh my God. What's happening? What's going on?
If only he had brought the satellite phone. although, to be honest with you, I don't know that it would have done him much good because he was pinned on both ends. I don't know unless he had it in his hand when he was walking through there,
right.
It's not like he could go run back to the car.
Yeah. If the satellite phone was what he should have done was, he should have had the satellite phone clipped to his belt, and then he would have been fine.
Right. I don't think satellite phones are that convenient to clip.
I've never used a satellite phone. I have no.
Nor have I.
Yes.
Because I know they're bulky, right? So I could very easily see him leaving it in the car or putting it down and it being out of reach when that happened.
Right.
He would have had to have it right next to him because he had a leg pinned and the arm pinned, and he would have been kind of trapped face down.
Right. If he had
was if he had it on him. If he had it on him.
If he had it, if he had it on in his hand, he would have had to have it already in his hand to then dial it and shout into the phone from a distance.
Wait, he was actually trying to recall in his finding, and then he fell into the trap.
Right, but he was using a radio that was out of range.
Right.
Which is the reason why you had Chekhov's satellite phone. Mm-hmm. Except in this case, it wasn't used in the final act.
But that was the checkoff to explain why the radio wouldn't work, right? I mean, in other words, it's just instead of having them pull out the radio and go, "Gee, it's not working," like they do with cell phones, they throw the satellite checkoff's gun to let us know. So when it happens, it's like it's a better screenwriting beat than, "Oh, my cell phone isn't working."
Right, it's a tight script, I think, about the establishing. Again, they don't have to, they don't necessarily need to make a big argument because you are in the middle of nowhere, where we I think can all accept that being in the middle of nowhere, your phones aren't always going to work.
Right.
Right. Right.
I mean, I've been in the middle of somewheres and my phone doesn't work.
Right. Right. That's true. Absolutely. Same here. Some parts of my town, actually. And I do have to say that even though there is people here, I mean, it's not like nobody's here, but it is still very, very rural. This section of the town that are still forests or hills with forests and whatever, that probably no one ever goes to. And that's why this guy has been able to bring all these corpses out there or these women out there and kill them. And rape them and do all these terrible things to them without ever being caught, because the chance of anybody stumbling in that one specific spot in the woods is probably slim to none. And the only reason people stumbled on it is because his car broke down. And so it basically labeled right here, there's someone around here.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's somebody living there, but how the hell was he supposed to know that?
Yeah.
Because the only reason he found the corpses is because he was hunting a wolf.
Right. That's right. And the guy's been doing it for a long time because there's been corpses with bones there.
Yeah.
As well. So even though the guy lived close, really lived that close.
Yeah. Well, he even highlights it during the final conversation with the mother, is pretty much saying, you know, this didn't really have to happen if my car didn't fucking break down. You know, that was the one big hiccup, because he had a routine. During the final conversation with the mother, he says this never would have had to happen if my car didn't break down.
Right.
Yeah, the serial killer said that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he's right, too. If the car didn't break down, no one would have kept on killing, probably.
Yeah. And I mean,
but
kind of
our heroes. Yeah. Be attacked by them.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, just the fact that, you know, you see a lot of serial kills and stuff like that. A lot of them get caught because they make one dumb mistake, or their ritualistic routine has a hiccup, and suddenly they are made vulnerable to be found out.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, like, Richard Ramirez, which I'm reading a book about him, and I saw the Netflix series that they're pushing right now.
Man,
he got caught because what he usually did was he wiped down he steals cars continuously, and he wipes down always wears gloves, but this one day he didn't. But he wiped because it was a hot day, so he wiped down an entire car, except he forgot to
The mirror.
One spot on the outside. Yeah, the mirror. The rear view mirror on the outside of the car, I think. So there was a print on that, and that's how they got him.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, if you're a prospective serial killer, please just write in for Dark Discussions Podcast for some advice on how not to get caught.
It was a lot easier in the 70s and the 80s.
Well, right. Time machine is number one. Yeah. Go back to the 1880s. You're good.
That's right. So this guy here, this is exactly what Abe said, which is he had one hiccup, which is his car broke down.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't start. And that screwed everything up.
Well, and another thing that confused me after my first watch that is now much clearer to me is the whole end of the movie. Obviously, he kills the daughter, but I was very confused the first time I watched it because he was burning stuff in a fire pit outside, and I thought he was burning the daughter's body, but then the mother finds the daughter in the bedroom, so I'm like, wait, what the hell? And he was just burning his own clothes.
Yeah. Because his DNA is stuff
he knows about
there.
DNA evidence. Yeah. So he was burning the sheets on the bed where he bled and the clothes he was wearing.
I don't even want to know what he did to the daughter.
Yeah, we didn't. I was left unclear about the daughter. I presumed the daughter was killed, but I didn't get that there was an obvious thing that they said. Like, they didn't show, like, the hand, you know, just leaning it to frame or something like that.
No, but
like
they showed the mother's reaction.
Yeah.
Right.
And then she immediately went and skinned the guy. So I'm guessing that he killed the daughter.
Yeah, that's pretty much what breaks her.
I had to go.
He could have overflowed the toilet. I don't know.
Mike has a point. I had to go to Wikipedia and read the plot to make sure that was that what she saw. The daughter is killed. But I agree with Mike. They didn't show the corpse or even a flash of the corpse or anything.
No, and that's why I was confused the first time.
Yeah. So I would agree that it was confusing. So three of us were confused.
I mean, I was working under the assumption the daughter was dead. I was kind of expecting there to be a confirmation reveal at some point in those last few minutes, that the cops were going to find her or that the mom was going to walk over to like a body or something. That would have made it more concrete. Not that she was injured, not that she was raped, not that there's some other, obviously something horrible happened to the daughter,
mm-hmm.
but there's that, you're watching these movies for a reason, you want to know what Arma Vail was.
Well, and there was so much that was awesome about that last scene. There was the music, and I think it was a really smart choice to have just that music by itself.
Yeah.
And not even deal with all the sound effects going along with what was happening. Because there's that one moment where you don't hear it, but she just screams this primal scream in his face right before she rips his off. His
face, yeah.
Which is awesome. And then she opens the door and the cops are standing there and she's holding this dude's face and like she's unarmed. She put the knife down before she opened the door. She's unarmed, but she just like tosses this face out the door and they all jump backwards.
Yeah. Now how chill are these Canadian police that this woman walks out of a cabin covered in blood, carrying a man's face.
Oh, Mike.
They just kind of ignore.
Mike. It's obvious. They just saw. They just saw 20 dead women, and their chief, at a ritualistic murder scene. So,
but they don't know who did it.
Nothing was going to surprise them at that point. And
but
also,
you would think that the possibility woman, that it was her could have entered their minds.
They know the woman personally. She's a local. They know her. She was in the office just a couple of days ago, the day before.
That's the extent to which they knew her.
I don't know about that. I think they knew she was out there the whole time.
I think they were just absolutely horrified.
You got to remember that.
Well, and one of my favorite things about that last scene was the look on that I don't even know what agency they were working for, but the woman, the look on her face as the mother walked by, it was this combination of, Jesus Christ, this is the most horrible thing I've ever witnessed. And also, good for her.
I also like how the music kept droning until she sits down on the porch and she clicks. And as soon as she clicks it off, the film ends.
Right.
I have to agree with Mike here also, because even though they know her personally, she's covered with blood with a face. And like Mike said, why wouldn't they just expect that maybe she was the murderer? So I don't see how they wouldn't not have held her down with guns or taken her down immediately.
Because that's not a cool ending, Phil.
Well, that's all I can think of.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's so the ending could happen the way they wanted it to.
Yeah, because I didn't get the experience that I think it was you, Abe, that just said, or maybe it was you, Mike, Eric, that she said, yeah, good for you, in the expression. I think it was just complete shock, but I don't know. I
mean, yeah, and they're Canadian police. They're just a lot more polite. I think that's
well,
just...
and that woman had just said 2 minutes earlier, I want to get the guy that did this.
Yeah, she did say that. Yeah. Assuming it was a guy, but you never know. It could have been a woman. But, yeah, I pretty much, I think what it was is they pretty much knew that it wasn't our protagonist that did it, but they didn't expect our protagonist to do what she did either.
Well, and honestly, all of my problems with this movie have to do with the things they did intentionally to set up this ending, so I'm entirely cool with it because I love this ending.
It was a very, very powerful ending. It was really visceral. It was, you know, it's right at the very end of a crazy roller coaster in the last like 30-20 minutes of the film. Once things started rolling, it just didn't stop till that very moment.
Yeah, if A Good Woman Is Hard to Find wasn't last year, this would have been the best ending, craziest ending of the year, but it comes in second. But a close.
No, it's first one.
I don't know. I
do.
Eric.
Yeah, you're wrong.
I don't want to say anything because I don't want to spoil it. But I'll just say.
Yeah, we know how you feel.
The box, and the gun. That's all I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're wrong.
No, you're wrong.
tonight, Crossfire.
Sure, poop your head.
Okay, so you have a hamster face. Jeez. All right. Let's get back to it.
Intelligent debate.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what about the wolf? Do you think it killed the dog, or do you think the serial killer killed the dog?
No, I was thinking about that, and I think it was the wolf, because you hear the dog cry out right before they see the wolf.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
because he runs off. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because I was wondering about that, because the wolf has been eating everything else, and it didn't eat the dog, so I thought that was a little weird, and it might have been the serial killer, but it just makes more sense for it to have been the wolf, because you actually hear the dog right before you see the wolf.
Yeah.
Right. And this is a German Shepherd, which could have taken out a wolf, but they kept on saying this is a really big, dangerous wolf. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
It was significantly larger than that dog.
Yeah. It was a big ass rogue wolf. You know, it was also a very opportunistic animal, this one, because it had no pack. So it took whoever could get it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a good point, Abe, that it was a lone wolf, and you usually don't see that. And so, yeah, it was a psycho. And it was big, big mother.
Yes, it was. No, but I kind of liked how the mom found the dog and then just didn't tell the daughter it was dead. Kept on, he'll be back tomorrow, I'm sure.
I mean, she does know it's not coming back. Right, that's that they are going to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Well, the daughter died before they got a chance. So.
Oh, well, I guess that is a gamble then worth having. Maybe she'll die before she has to find out the truth, and we can be spared.
Jeez,
that's awful.
Right. What
she was thinking was that she was just so relieved when she found the daughter's body. Thank God I don't have to. Tell her about the dog.
You're a horrible person.
God, it's so bad.
Yeah, you are, Mike. It's terrible.
There's a rainbow behind every cloud.
Her what she was doing was legit, which just kept on saying he'll be back, because I mean she could say that it could be back, and then when it never comes back, she could say, well, unfortunately something must have happened. But
well, it's not legit when she knows he's dead. She wasn't using, like, best guesswork. She buried the body. She knows the dog was dead.
Well, it's like a lot of movies or shows we've seen where they said, let's get another goldfish before Junior comes home.
Mm-hmm.
and they won't notice.
Yeah, dogs are not the same thing, and she's not five.
I understand, Mike, but I see what she was doing. She didn't want to tell the daughter that the dog was died and just saying the dog ran away from home.
Or she was probably at least waiting till the husband was back home.
She didn't get to have that conversation either, did she?
No.
Oh. Yeah. He's with the dog.
She had a rough day.
Yeah. Now, that was weird, too, because he was kind of the lead for a while, and then suddenly he just disappears from the movie, and I was curious, and then 30 minutes after he's still gone, I was going, what the hell, this is the weirdest thing. Mm-hmm. So that was really odd too, and we now know why, because it was really her film, not his film, but it was interesting. And then when you find out he's gone, I think that was a, I mean, they went there with him, they went there with the cop, which you figure, okay, he's the, you know, the disposable character. But then they went there with Renee. That wasn't expected. And then of course, what she does, it wasn't not expected either.
Well, and I'm really glad I got to watch this the second time. Because, like I said, the first time I watched it, I was a little confused and had a bunch of questions and didn't think it really made a whole lot of sense. And now, upon second watch, all of my questions have been answered except for the ones that are obviously just they wanted to do that to set up the ending.
Right. Yeah, I mean, some of the questions answers are assumed. You know, what happened to the husband? We know he got killed by the serial killer, but Abe had a good point, which it could have been one way, and you had another point. But again, all those things are legit because, again, it's not through his perspective. We're watching it through her perspective, which is she finds the body and finds him dead with a bullet in his head.
Well, and initially, upon my first watch, I thought that the serial killer just like sniped him or something. Only when I was paying closer attention the second time did I realize that they had interacted.
Right. Okay. And see, and I didn't even figure out that the serial killer's leg was the bear trap. I just assumed that he got hit by a shovel or something in a hand-to-hand combat with the husband.
Mm.
That's what I was thinking. But
I think it was – I don't know. I think it was the bear trap.
Would have fallen in those traps. Horse. Holy shit. That would suck so bad. Because he steps into one trap and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I like that, dude. That's really a bummer. Then he falls into the other one. Like, oh, God.
I don't even know if those things are illegal anymore, too, to be honest.
It's kind of like
not.
Because people forget them, you know, and then someone's just walking and gets killed by one, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Or the bear trap in the face. Woo!
It's kind of like the episode of The Simpsons with Sideshow Bob walking into the rakes on the air. It's just a lot worse.
Yeah. That's worse than rakes.
Worse. But I actually thought as painful as those were, the trap in the face.
Yeah.
It was awesome, but I also didn't like it because if this serial killer was as successful as he was, there was no way he would have had any of that stuff available for her to grab and use on him.
Well, keep in mind that A, it wasn't his house, and B, he was drugged.
He was drugged?
The pain meds, he was injecting them to himself.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay, that's fair. Yeah. Because I would have thought he would have tied her up or something. And then also, I wouldn't think there would be anything that could be used to club him or hit him that would be around. But you're right.
He wasn't at his best at that moment.
He was also hobbling around too.
Yeah, but the drugs makes more sense, Abe, because that would.
I know that. I'm just saying. Yeah. At this point.
I'm not arguing with you, Abe. I'm just making
fight.
Yeah, fight. But yeah.
Hands to face.
Yeah. So if he didn't have the injury to his leg, he wouldn't have used the drugs, and then she would have been dead.
Well, if he didn't have the injury to his leg, he would have been long gone, and the whole thing never would have happened. So
that's true. I also like how no one knew there was a serial killer around, so it shows you that he was one of those types that probably
he was a good one.
Yeah, exactly. It was a really good one. Yeah, he probably did it like 40 miles away, kidnapped someone, brought him there, and he found some place in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, well, because it was the place where no one was usually allowed to be in. So, you know, so he knew to take advantage of that, the laws to his advantage.
Well, let me ask you, what do you mean they weren't allowed to be there?
Like that it was federal land and stuff like that. There was laws in place that people couldn't just be in there.
Are you sure about that? I thought a lot of federal land you can.
I thought it was like a national park or something.
Yeah. So something like that, but living there. But it kept it in the middle of nowhere where people didn't venture too far in there.
Yeah, I would agree with you on there. That a lot of people aren't. I'm gonna if you live up in this area in New England, like if you go up to those middle of nowhere park up near the White Mountains in New Hampshire, it's just hundreds of miles of nothing. Yeah. You're right.
But he was trying to make sure because he didn't bury the bodies; they were like out in the open.
Right.
So
right.
He had to choose a location where it was very unlikely that anyone would venture close to finding them.
Yeah. And what's that area near Albany, Mike and Erica? Is that the not the Poconos, the Catskills, right? That whole area where there's nothing. It's a national park there too, and so it's like nothing.
There's a bunch of national parks.
Yeah, but hunting usually in the United States there tends to not be a lot of hunting allowed in national parks.
Right.
Right. This is Canada.
Let alone living in national. Right. So we would need some sort of ginger Canadian bastard to come in and explain the rules of that estranged land.
Right. Off record for a moment, Mike. Fernando Tatis Jr. just signed a 14-year deal for $340 million. $340 million. Crazy. San Diego too. Anyway, sorry. So that's baseball for anybody who was curious.
Carson Hunt got traded with the Colts.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my, I didn't see that one. Oh, I'll have to check that out. Oh, sorry about that. All right, let's get off of sports. what else do we want to discuss on this film? Any other things of note?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I think there's a very simple film. There isn't a lot to talk about beyond that ending. Whoa. I don't know if they used like animatronics or makeup or what they did, but the face at the end where like got just the one eye blinking, but his mouth still
the
moving.
The fact that he was still moving was
right.
What made
wonderfully
horrible.
Right.
So, you know, he's just alive and suffering immensely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that, I mean, I don't, it's tough to say it because he's a human, but he deserved that suffering, I think.
Yeah,
you don't know who he killed.
Well, we know he killed
Renee.
They could
have been pedophiles. Maybe they was asking for it.
No, but he killed Renee.
Maybe he was a good serial killer like Dexter.
That's fair, but he killed Renee, and she wasn't evil. So that's enough.
You knew her for 3 days. We don't know what she's been doing out in the woods.
Mike, you're a horrible person.
He is. Mike is.
I'm sure
the moral of tonight's episode is Mike is a horrible person.
I'm sure the guy could, you know, pull through. Just put a little few bandages and some alcohol in there.
Just folks, just consider the accusers. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and the guy's doing his gorilla dance over her, and we know what he's about to do to her. And I'm sure, you know, our lead actress there, Mary, I think her name, the character is, she didn't deserve, Anne, that's it. Yeah. So yeah, that was freaky when he was doing the gorilla dance. I was like, oh no, then I,
oh no,
no.
Guess what? Bear trap to the face.
I honestly thought she was going to throw the bear trap into his groin when he was standing over him.
That would have been awesome too.
Yeah, for a second there, I thought they were going to show what was going to happen, and then after it happened, it was when she was going to get her revenge, but thank God he got the bear trap before anything else happened. Jesus Christ.
Oh,
Well, and something else I thought I watched for the second time is I thought they might have forgotten to leave the bear trap marks on the face after it was removed, but they didn't.
Yeah, okay.
They were still there.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah. And Nick Stahl, the moment I saw her, it was I was like, oh, my God, who's this guy? And I thought it was her husband, but then you find out it's not her husband. And then when he wakes up.
He's playing the wolf.
And you see Nick, it's Nick Stahl. I immediately knew up the bad guy because he's always typecast as the bad guy. Nick Stahl,
I'm not going to stop laughing for a long time about the fact that he was in a movie called The Man Without a Face.
Yes, his film debut, actually. Yeah. But yeah, he always plays a villain, it seems. So I kind of guess, geez, poor bastard. Typecast again. Yeah.
He'll be okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he can always say he was skinned on film. Yeah. He also played the yellow bastard in Sin City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was the lead in Bully. That was a good film, too. And he was on that TV show Carnival on HBO that was real popular, even though it didn't survive. All right, so I guess we can... wrap up our discussion.
What the hell is that?
That was a phone malfunction. Sorry about that.
All right, so I guess we can wrap up our discussion on Hunter. And that's actually an interesting title when you think about it, because yeah, it's multiple hunters, three different hunters actually.
It's deep, man. It's got multiple meanings.
Symbolism.
Right. You got the wolf. You got the husband. You got the serial killer. You got
who's the hunter and who's the hunted?
That's right. Exactly.
So well, it's the man. Hunter. It's the hunter, meaning the hunter of hunters.
But who's the hunter of the hunted?
Is it the wolf
hunter?
Or is it the man, though?
That's right. Exactly.
Yep. I would go with both.
Exactly.
I would go with the father, right? Was it the father,
that's
the
why
one
it's
hunting
so
the
deep,
hunter?
Man.
The father was hunting the wolf and the man.
It's right. Well, like that's why I think they,
multiple
they doubled
meanings.
The name. Where's Chrissy when you need her? She could explain it. now, I guess we can get into you know what we've been watching and things of that nature. So, Mike, what about you? Have you seen anything besides Discovery of Witches that you want to mention?
Well, I've been watching, which Eric I think has mentioned in the past, For All Mankind on Apple TV.
Mm.
Oh yeah.
And I've burned through seven episodes in 2 days.
Nice.
And yeah, it's really good. It is a little wistful because it's something that I think my father would have enjoyed. Because it is it's for those who don't know, confused my wife because she walked in like in the middle of the second episode, I think, and sat down and like was confused at the at the revelation kind of at the end of the episode, because you didn't realize it's an alternate history story. But it's an alternate history that starts with the premise that, that the Russians made it to the moon before the Americans, and how would that have changed the space race? How would that have changed, to on a more of a background thing, the political climate in the country? And some things happen the same, some things happen different. For example, Nixon still has the issue with Watergate, but it is a different president than Carter that gets elected after him. So it's kind of interesting to find. I'm really kind of enjoying it. But it is set at this point. I think we're maybe only to 73 or 74. And I know the season 2 coming out soon is going to jump to the 80s. But yeah, if you have any interest in that kind of stuff at all, I definitely recommend it. I think it's really good.
All right. Anything else that you've seen that you wanted to mention?
Nothing I can think of off the top of my head.
All right. Sounds good. What about you, Abe?
No new movies, but I have been trying out some demos of some games that have been, you know, up in the air in terms of release. But they're pretty interesting. One is a very short experimental game called They Grow. Basically, somebody did a little horror game in which you have to collect samples of a virus while invading monsters that actually meld together and grow in real time. It's pretty cool. You can actually find it and download for free and try it out. It's on PC. The way it sounds like, according to the developer, there is supposed to be like a full version, I guess. Maybe something like a more of an expanded story or just something with more levels. So there's that one. There's also a Victorian kind of gothic horror game I was playing a demo of called Lamentium, if that's the correct name. Basically, you play as a husband whose wife has been sick with some kind of mysterious illness, and you're trying to cure. You bring her to this renowned mysterious doctor who apparently has found some means outside of the norm to help, and then you find yourself trapped inside of that place filled with horrifying monsters. It takes a lot of the survival horror elements of the Resident Evil games, like using ink for to write down saves, sword chests and stuff. And it's more, it's more like in a pixel form. It's pretty interesting. And then there was another game called Hidden Deep, which is a side-scrolling exploration where you play as explorers trying to rescue people in a scientific lab who have not been in contact for a long time while invading alien life forms. It uses a lot of physics and like cave climbing, cave exploring tools and tracking devices and stuff like that to try to complete tasks. As I said, these are all demos, not complete games, but they are there if you want to check them out and see if they might be interesting, might interest you in terms of, you know, when it comes to their future release. Outside of that, nothing else.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I wrapped up the Stand. Just ended the 9th episode, and it was awful, just like all the other episodes. So not a good show.
Very are you sure?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you need to watch it again.
No. I won't.
And The Mist.
No, I won't do that. And Lovecraft Country. Yeah, no. I'm not watching any of that stuff anymore. So yeah, that was garbage. And I'm watching The Discovery of Witches, season 2, and episode 6 is so far, in my opinion, the best episode of the entire series. So it's really, really doing really good now. It's a good show and I recommend. It was just announced that it's finished episode 3 wrap up, and that will be the last season. So each season is one of the three books.
Season 3 wrap up.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. And so they're not milking it. They're just doing a season per book, and then they're done. So that'll be that's I guess what a refreshing. Yeah, I'll let you go in a second, Mike. Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all I've been watching besides and Big Sky. I've been still watching that, and that's really good. A thriller on, I think it's ABC. ABC. You can watch it on Hulu the next day. And it's a really good serial killer show. Highly recommend. And that's pretty much it, besides the movies for Dark Discussions and stuff. Mike, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I did forget. I had just watched, because I got the week off from school, I had watched the second season of His Dark Materials on HBO Max, which is based on a trilogy of books. And this is based on, and they're doing the same thing, where it's a book a season.
What's the name of the show again?
His Dark Materials. I've mentioned after watching the first season last year, and it's a decent series. I think this season starts out a little slow, but it gets better. It's certainly something that you might want to try.
What's the station?
HBO Max.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Okay. And so is it supernatural, science fiction, horror?
Yeah, it's
all of those things.
Yeah, it's kind of like in a a little bit more of an adult Harry Potter, what's the Narnia kind of thing. It focuses on on a special child in a mystical world, but it's a little bit of a darker story than that. So it seems a little bit more adult than that. You've got Ewan McGregor has a small role in it. Lin-Manuel Miranda has a role in it. It's worth giving it a shot.
And who's the Miranda? You said who's that?
Lin-Manuel Miranda, the guy from Hamilton.
Hamilton, yeah.
Oh, okay. And he was in Mary Poppins too, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. All right. Very good. Eric.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I was not on the show last week. The reason I was not on the show last week is because about mid-afternoon, I started to get a sore throat and lose my voice, and I thought I might be getting sick, so I decided maybe podcasting for a few hours wasn't the best move, and I took a personal day last Friday. Well, as it turns out, I wasn't actually getting sick. I was just talking too much at work. So I had a day off, and I set a new personal record by watching 6 movies in one day.
Damn.
So before I get, I'm not going to list all those 6 at the same time, because part of what I did is I had my annual winter movie festival in my living room. So here are the movies over the course of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 days that I watched as my winter film festival. I watched The Gray, We Are Still Here, The Thing, 30 Days of Night, and then Watson saw me posting all these on Facebook and was like, hey, dude, I got another one that fits in your theme. Watch Red Dot on Netflix. So I watched Red Dot. Then Fargo and Frozen and The Shining, Dead Snow, Dead Snow 2, and Misery. That was my winter film festival, and it was a lot of fun.
Could I ask you a question? Who did you like better in Frozen, Anna or Elsa?
That's not the movie.
I know. I was just being a
bunny. You were a dumb person with children.
Yeah. I thought it was a funny
one. The good Frozen.
Have you seen the other Frozen?
It doesn't matter.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
The other Frozen is not the better Frozen, Phil.
No.
However, it is better than Frozen 2.
I don't know. The first Frozen.
Anywho, other movies I watched. I watched this movie. I signed up for Epix. I don't know. I signed up through my Apple TV, so I don't know if this is an Apple TV thing or just an Epix thing they're offering right now. But right now they're offering 99 cents a month for 2 months and then $2.99 a month after that. And there's a movie that right now you can only get through Epix called Saint Maud. So I was willing to pay 99 cents to watch Saint Maud, and I did. And I liked it.
That was the one I was going to ask about for doing, but I looked, I didn't see it available anywhere.
Yeah. Epix is the only place you can stream it right now.
And bastards.
Now, Epix, do you have to do a subscription? I may have missed this.
Yeah, it's yet another subscription service. This one's MGM.
Yeah.
Right now, there's a deal. You can get 99 cents a month for 2 months, and then it's $2.99 after that. So I watched St. Maud. I really don't see a whole lot on there other than that I'm interested in, so I'm probably just going to cancel it immediately.
Gotcha. But that's not a bad price, $2.99 a month for – compared to all the other.
No, it's not. It's just, to me,
if you're going to watch it, it's not a bad price.
Yeah, if it doesn't have a whole lot of material that interests me, that's all.
Gotcha. Yeah, so
I still think there's mergers coming.
Yeah, it could be. But this is MGM, so they're all separate. So St. Maud, yeah, that was one of the films that is probably on Dark Discussions to review episode list. Eventually, whenever it's available as a rental other places, I would think. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you've seen it now, so you would know better than us. But like Mike said, that would be one of the films that he was going to mention to do an episode on, which
I mean, I'd go with it. That's fine.
Gotcha.
All right. I also watched. Oh, I'm so sad I watched this. An awful, awful movie called Sky Sharks.
Sky Sharks?
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I like me a shark movie, and I'm used to many of the shark movies being bad. And I figured Sky Sharks would be a ridiculously bad, amusingly bad shark movie. And it's just a bad, bad, bad shark movie. And not even really a shark movie. It's more of a Nazi zombie movie.
What?
With flying sharks? The whole thing's real dumb. So like, avoid it, Eric, like the plague.
Eric, do you ever like look in the garbage sometimes and see food in there and decide?
That's a fair question, but no, I don't. I understand.
It's kind of the same principle.
Yeah.
It might be good.
And then I rewatched a couple other movies. I rewatched Godzilla King of the Monsters, because that's on HBO Max right now. I'd forgotten there's a moment in that movie where a fighter pilot ejects directly into Rodan's gaping maw.
Yes, yeah, it's pretty such an awesome scene.
That was worth the whole sit for me. I also rewatched, unfortunately, It's Alive. Scott made me rewatch that for the Basement Movie Cast, and I was really kind of upset about that. Yeah, and that movie is so interesting that while we were recording our commentary, we had a discussion about the hardness scale for pencils. Yeah. Then I watched a couple new movies. I watched The Little Things, which is also on HBO Max right now.
Yeah, it's Denzel Washington, right?
Be amazingly boring and completely pointless.
Denzel Washington, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's too bad.
It is. Yeah, too I've bad, not heard. I normally enjoy him. But this movie is basically like, what if the movie Seven, but nothing actually happened?
Yeah, see, that's the reason why I'm disappointed, because I thought it was going to be an awesome like serial killer film. And
No. I'm sure they wanted it to be, but it's not, because it's just not. And then I watched a movie, Sator, which I thought was going to be like a real interesting possession type movie. But it's really just a bunch of artsy fartsy bullshit.
Your thoughts are not turning out very great this week.
No, they're not. I'm really making some poor choices in my life. So I'll try and do better next week.
As just a word of advice. I know you're you, but if the word shark appears in a movie title, you know, probably not a good idea.
but didn't you have fun watching it, Eric?
Not really.
That's too bad.
Normally Dan and I can yuck it up during a movie like that. And that's why we were watching it, because we were not expecting it to be a good movie. But we were expecting it to be a bad movie that we could laugh at. But instead, it was just like a bad movie. We were like, what the fuck is happening? I don't understand.
Yeah, there are bad entertaining movies, and then there's just boring bad movies.
Yeah, this is not entertaining bad. This is just bad, bad.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking right now, because I'm kind of brushing up on my Kong. I can't find anywhere King Kong Escapes. I know that's going to be a bad movie, but I still want to watch
that's
it.
Yeah, that's the one, Mecha Kong. Mecha Kong.
Yes, exactly. And I need to see a Mecha Kong before I see King Kong versus Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. What? I saw that as a kid. Yeah, yeah. Why? I was kind of disappointed with
that. Kong versus Godzilla?
Just because it's like the one, it's one of two gaps in my King Kong knowledge, I guess.
Okay, I'll accept that answer.
You know, and right now the only option, because it's not streaming anywhere, except I guess maybe Japan, for obvious reasons.
Mike.
Can you buy it on disc?
Ah, Mike, when we were doing our 10th year anniversary, King Kong. I should have chose that as one of my films.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was thinking about that afterwards. I just threw my five out there to get it done and out of the way and get it first so that people didn't all pick whatever I was going to pick.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah.
But King Kong is definitely one. King Kong films could really deserve a whole episode all on their own.
They're quite an anomaly, yeah.
Yeah, some of them are damn good. Some of them are damn good. Yeah.
You can buy it on Blu-ray for $9.99.
Yeah, why don't you do that? That's not a bad price, Mike.
Because again, how often am I going to watch it? Jeez.
probably has extras too. Good extras. There you go. There's your answer. Yeah. Anything else, Eric?
No. That's it.
Out in the next minute as we get closer to King Kong versus Godzilla. Godzilla versus King Kong.
You know what, Phil?
What's that?
I think Mike might be mildly anticipating King Kong versus Godzilla.
I think so. And I think him and Abe are both going to say,
I have.
They're both going to say, we have to do it as an episode, which I understand.
I would be against it at all. It'd be pretty different from what we usually cover.
Mutants, but still.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's expected that we'll be doing that as an episode. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Anything else? No. All right. All right. So I guess we can. Get into our final thoughts on Hunter Hunter. But before we do that, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancy Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
And you do. You got to see It's Alive again for another podcast?
You got to? I don't know if I'd say I got to.
you had to.
I was forced to. But the reason I was forced to is because we did a commentary on it for the Basement Movie Cast.
Gotcha.
You poor soul.
Right, sounds good.
Yeah, and none of us were very thrilled with the movie. Scott thought he liked that movie, but upon rewatch realized he didn't.
I know Chrissy likes it because she wanted it suggested as a 10th year anniversary episode, but we already did the episode, I told her. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has its fans. I mean, it's a good grindhouse film, I guess.
I don't think there's anything good about that film.
Yeah, that's fair. Mike, now that Inside Out, which will be the fourth episode of Cinema a la Carte, is being released February 19th. So by the time people hear this, it'll already be out. What is this podcast that me, you, and Eric do and that we're probably going to be restarting in March?
You pretty much just said all of it.
What is it?
It's a podcast with you, me, and Eric, where we discuss movies like Inside Out, where we discuss basically films that we want to talk about, but that are not really dark discussions material, or at least not obviously. Sometimes it's borderline, like, say, Hostels or Collateral. Other times, not so much.
Solid.
I was going to say Precious. Or
Inside Out.
Inside
or
Out.
Or Inside
yep.
Out, right. We take a turn picking a movie in a rotation, and I've got a movie coming up next that's going to be a 80s science fiction classic, or classic, finger quotes, depends on how you look at it. So that's us, and we basically were doing it when we're not doing other things. We had to take a hiatus first because I was inundated with COVID work, and we were also doing Travel Guide to Lovecraft Country, and then
Phil decided to do a podcast on every single goddamn show that came out this year.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't planning to. I wasn't expecting a Discovery of Witches to pop up in January. I thought it was coming in like May or something. So unfortunately, it popped up and it's like, holy shit. And then American Gods popped up and it's like, holy shit, what do we do? And so me and Mike canceled American Gods, and we still got like 350 listens in the first day of our announcement. Wow. Yeah, I guess we must have had a lot of people that were listening to the podcast. Yeah. So, yeah. So,
again, thanks for everybody who was listening. Sorry to disappoint you. Or maybe maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm happy I didn't waste your time.
Or actually, we didn't waste our time.
Well, we would not have enjoyed it. It would have shown in the work. I think it probably showed in the work in the second season reviews to begin with. And we just basically kept bitching about the same things week after week, which makes me really not want to listen to the Stan podcast, because unless they are creatively bad in new ways every week, usually when a thing is bad, it's bad the same way over and over and over again.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, and it's a shame, too, because I love Emily Browning and I love Ian McShane. But
let me ask you this, Phil, about the Stand. Yes. I understand that Mr. King wrote a different ending for the new miniseries.
Yes.
Now, forget everything else. Just that. Was that any good?
No, not really. It was boring and very predictable. And it ruins the suspense of the circle ends at the end of the Stand novel, the jungle scene. It kind of ruins that suspense, because that what happens in the jungle scene in that book, you assume it already 60 pages has gone by when you think that character is gone from the book, and then suddenly reappears at the end. Well, this new coda changes that, and it's like, oh, nice. So that all suspense goes away and stuff. Yeah, so it's not too good.
All right. I just thought I'd ask.
No, it's a fair question. Yeah. I mean, but I'll say this, Eric. It was the best episode out of the 9 episodes.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So it's worth it, you're saying?
No.
I think you should watch it again to make sure.
No.
I think now that you know the ending, the first 8 episodes will make a lot more sense.
if you see what the changes they did and how horrible these changes are.
Well, changes are not inherently bad. This is a thing, you get hung up on.
You didn't hear what I said. They are horrible.
Yeah, but you consider any change to be horrible.
Well, no. In Phil's defense here.
Not true.
My understanding is that they changed it into a non-linear storytelling.
Yeah.
So they're trying to build suspense for things you already know the resolution for, which usually doesn't work very well.
Yeah, that's people who do the Lost formatting without understanding why the Lost formatting worked.
They change one character into like this a pimpish buffoon. It's like, what the? No, it's bad because it's bad, because the Stand original miniseries from 1994, which I know you're not a fan of, Mike.
I don't think it's bad. It just
was not only a fairly good adaptation, even with the changes, but it kept the tone of the book as well. And it was fairly good, too, in my opinion. This, it's just completely different, completely gone. It's just terrible. And it's just bad. I could see someone like Kevin Letts, because he was supposed to join the podcast, or you, Mike, for that matter, not knowing, having read the book and just watching this and go, this is just terrible.
But did you enjoy it?
No. And let's just
Are
say
you
this.
Sure? Because I'm not clear.
Tomatoes, the audience score is below 26%, meaning.
But did you like it?
No.
I can't tell. Are you sure you didn't like it?
I didn't bring it up again.
What was the critic's score?
That was 52%, I think.
Huh.
Yeah. So I ripped
it. Better than the Giant.
No, the Giant was 48%. So
that is better than the Giant. 50 something is better than 48.
Oh yeah, right. But you know, you get the poll plus or minus 5%.
I'm just saying, better than the Giant.
To be honest, the Giant was better than this crap.
I don't believe you.
Being skinned alive is better than the Giant.
I'm not trying to convince you. I care less whether you think the Giant's worse, but either way, this is terrible. Anyway, So I did answer your question about the ninth episode and Stephen King's.
Yeah, but I still don't understand if you liked it or not.
Well, the good news is, Phil, they'll just remake it again in another 30 years.
That's true. And
so
and
you won't
to
have
honest,
to wait that long before you get your ultimate reboot.
Yeah,
that really gets
what's
it right
reboot?
This time. Reboot. We're sorry.
Reboot.
It must be a New Yorker thing or something. I don't know.
Just slip of the tongue. So it's yeah. I mean, that's always the sad part, right? Like, you know, they did it so well and they fucked up it chapter two.
Two, yeah.
I mean, you know, it was, which is okay at best, but
at
just
best.
Not as good. As good as the first, and you know, it's whenever they screw up something that you really are looking forward to, you just know that yeah, they can remake it. But I mean, how long did it take them to redo Kong versus Godzilla, right? I mean,
right.
Now it's almost 60 years now that we're looking at.
right. Yeah, and this The Stand was 26.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I mean, the fact that this is not well regarded, you know, maybe you shorten that length of time. Maybe you only have to wait like 10 years. Maybe it's going to be more in a Planet of the Apes timeline.
That's true, yeah.
Or maybe we'll all get wiped out by a real Captain Trips and won't have to worry about it.
Or the Chinese.
No, we're still going to want our entertainment, whether or not we're surviving an apocalypse.
I'm telling you, it's the nukes by the Chinese. That's what's going to happen.
And I'm telling you, what's going to happen, Eric, what's going to happen is everyone's wiped out. And there's going to be somebody who's going to walk outside and go, you know, with all these deserted streets, no, there's going to be perfect time to film a Stand remake because... production values right here. We're in the post-apocalypse. We should take advantage of it while we have it.
You're a horrible person.
Jeez.
Jesus. Tonight's episode. Hunter, subtitle. Mike is a horrible person.
just consider the critics. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think we have a point.
Oh, I believe me. After Lovecraft Country, and the difference between their ratings between fans and critics versus and as well as The Stand, with the critics giving it 52 and the fans giving it 24, I don't trust critics ever again, especially for TV.
Well, there was
okay.
We've talked about.
I don't ever
want
to hear you bringing up Rotten Tomatoes when you're trying to convince us to do an episode on a movie we don't want to do.
That's a fair point, Eric, because the critics suck. Fuck the critics. They suck.
Because that's one of Phil's standby tricks when he's really pushing hard for us to do an episode. Rotten Tomatoes got 76%.
Yeah, all the time.
Honestly, Eric,
there's only
four
people, Phil.
To be fair, Eric, it could be considered a trick, but at that time, I was still a fan of critics. It's only after Lovecraft Country and The Stand bent me over.
It's kind of like a 5-year-old trying to convince mom to stop at McDonald's by saying, I heard McDonald's French fries are really nutritious. Good for you.
It's true. Mike, that's an excellent analogy. Excellent.
I don't want it, but it's supposed to be healthy. I'll even have a Happy Meal if you want me to. to save you money.
Yeah. For you.
For you.
You won't have to cook.
Yes.
Or daddy, in my case. You don't have
to cook. Shit. I think we need to wrap this up.
Yeah, this is kind of going down rabbit hole weirdness.
Indeed. All right. So let's give our final thoughts on Hunter. So let's start with you, Abe.
I liked the film. I thought every the cast was really good. They used their runtime effectively to tell their story, establishing characters. So the pacing was solid, and once it got really rolling towards the third act, it was really didn't stop right to the end. And it has one hell of a visceral finale that honestly I think would have made my list of in terms of categories because of just how holy shit it was. It's a good watch. Definitely recommend. And it was a fun discussion. Yeah, those are my thoughts.
All right, sounds good. For me, it's a really good film. I'm glad that Eric had mentioned it during the 2020 recap. And then when we were throwing out films last week, Mike jumped on it when I threw that name out, and I'm glad I did. I was still timid, wasn't sure, but yeah, it was a really good film, very suspenseful. If you like serial killer films, this is a damn good one, and a big thumbs up. Eric?
Yeah, I really like this film. I was a little confused the first watch, because they did such a good job of misdirecting me. But man, that I seriously, the first time I watched this, well, I could not stop thinking about that ending for 2 days straight. It was just like burned into my brain. Man, whew, what an ending. Love this movie.
All right. And Mike?
Yeah, it's a solid film. It's a very simple film, very sparse film in a lot of ways. Mostly small cast until the very, very end, and then it's just a bunch of extras. Really good effects at the end. But it just does a great job of really building tension in those final moments. And yeah, I think it works well. I think it's a kind of a compelling character piece kind of in the beginning, and the compelling little drama sort of in the beginning, and then kind of gets more horror-y as you get along until you get really firmly in the horror category by the time you get to the end, which Eric had alluded to earlier. So yeah, I would definitely recommend it. Especially, you know, for a rental price, you know, because it's not an expensive rental right now, I don't think. And I'm sure it'll be showing up on one of the streaming services before too long if you don't want to pay for it.
All right, very good. So once again, this is a film directed by Sean Linden, written by Sean Linden, starring Devin Sawa and Camille Sullivan and Nick Stahl, among others. It's available, as Mike said, rental pretty much wherever rentals can be found, generally around $6.99. You can purchase it for about $14.99. IFC Midnight released it, which they're a pretty solid company for genre films. And this is another one they add to their cap as a feather. So after I get off here, I'll be reading my Richard Ramirez book. And so, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in. Let's talk about Hunter. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.